So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review way.
Oh, one, two, three.
He kicked out.
No, he didn't. No. That was two.
Oh, my God.
Here are your winners. The team.
Not the most high flying.
Scott Steiner.
Not the most technical.
And
not
Vader.
Even the moment psychology. But farthest, by far the most entertaining match of tonight. Oh,
wow.
My God. I've never seen such a display. I've been brutality like that in my career, illustrious career of commentary, KG.
Shaggy Two Dope, you said a mouthful. I've had the honor of calling countless matches with you on pay-per-view, and I have never in my long-legged life seen an ass-whipping in person on tape in fucking newspaper columns. I've never read, seen, or heard of anything as violent, as brutal, and as devastating as what has just happened inside of this ring.
Yo.
You know what would be the shit?
Let's trip in the sun.
What if we had our own island, man?
Let's trip in the sun.
I got my toes in the sand watching hoes play volleyball. It's summertime and I'm feeling jolly, y'all. Food on the fire, boats in the water, and taking time off from my cereal slaughtering. Here for the weekend, me and these friends. Sunny sunshine, blue skies never end. There's a mermaid waiting me to come in. Underwater on my ball, she's humming. Smoking on a fat one, we come to have fun. I got my dick in your hot dog bun. Pouring up shots for everybody that's sipping. Let's get loose now.
Naked photos everywhere, man.
What are you looking at?
No, I just mean like celebrities and stuff.
Oh, have you followed that whole leaked photo deal?
Of course I have. Who hasn't?
There was a headline today about how in the wake of nude photos being leaked, Hollywood is reeling. Reeling.
Okay.
From these.
Yeah.
Am I the only one who thinks, why the fuck do you have naked photos on your phone?
Uh-huh.
Like these 100-plus celebrities?
I guess people are just kind of curious about how they appear, how they look. You know, it's not always easy to see.
Have you investigated these photos?
Of course I have.
I have not. I feel kind of weird about that.
Why?
Because they're not meant to be out there.
Who cares?
Are they like posed shots? That's what I'm curious about.
Yeah.
You're kind of opening yourself up to the pop.
What if
you lost your phone and left it at a restaurant?
Well,
Jennifer Lawrence leaves her phone at a restaurant, and you've left that kind of stuff on your phone? Do you have naked pictures on your phone?
No, I do not. No, not of myself.
So you don't have to worry about your phone being hacked.
Yeah, no, I don't. But I suppose that's kind of part of the danger for some people, you know? But I don't think. You don't really think about that. I'm sure. Do you have any photos on your phone that you wouldn't want other people to see?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't.
Well, you're very careful then. I guess I really don't either. But what about like emails or like text exchanges or anything? Is there anything private?
Sure, I'm sure there's emails and texts that are private
okay.
that I don't want to see. I mean, to what end you're going to go to? There's nothing that's going to,
Are you sure? Think very carefully about some emails or texts that you've sent.
I mean, maybe someone will get my recent doctor's report where I have to pay attention to my cholesterol.
You are a pretty careful person. I guess when it comes
of course,
to what you
I'm
said.
Thinking 10 steps ahead of everybody here.
But I think many people they kind of. The persona that they portray, you know, in the public might not be exactly, you know, the same as they are with their closest personal friends or even with themselves.
It's like on the Saved by the Bell movie where Dustin Diamond's friend blackmailed him when he recorded him on an old school camcorder smoking a joint and said, if you don't get me a role on Saved by the Bell, the network is going to see this.
And then he went out and filmed a porno. Of himself.
Which he now claims a stunt double was in there for the sex scenes, and it wasn't actually Dustin Diamond. He's now completely retracted everything about that book. That, you know, I had no power over the book's contents at the end, and I had to pose for a photo on the cover, and I don't stand by most of the stories in the book.
Yeah.
And he's just trying to make nice now with the whole cast. Uh-huh. And the movie was not very negative in any sense. It was very much a... pretty wholesome look at the Saved by the Bell kids.
Well, good for him.
You but have to watch this movie.
I'll check it out.
Just for the first 2 minutes where you can see Paul Lazenby.
Why was he in there?
He played a security guard in the opening scene.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Because he told me about it, as you would know if you listened to the MMA report months ago when he was on the show. He was filming the scene as for the Saved by the Bell movie. And I was curious. I'm like, what are you playing in the Saved by the Bell movie? Like A.C. Slater's white father? Or
yeah.
What could you possibly be playing? Security guard figures.
Yeah. It'd be great if he was cast as Screech. Like the future Screech where he's all buffed up and looks like Paul Lazenby.
From Screech to the Mauler.
Yeah.
The evolution of Dustin Diamond.
You know, but as far as like the nude celebrity leaked photos are concerned, it's definitely kind of, it sucks, you know, to have your phone hacked. What's just amazing though is that it all came out at the same time. Were they all leaked by the same person, you think?
I don't know. I haven't followed it that closely. You would think it was one hacker or one small syndicate of hackers that got into these celebrities' phones. But maybe this is a kind of a breaking point for some celebrities to realize, hey, maybe my phone is not as personal as I think and I shouldn't be putting shots of my tits on my phone just in case I need a go-to nude pic to send to a random person.
Well, it's too bad because your phone should be that personal. You know, something you store on your own computer should be that personal. But unfortunately, I guess technology just has evolved so much. Like, we're all so connected that it's easy for.
Think how fast we communicate hackers. Just with air, sending these signals. And now people are going to figure out how to intercept those signals.
There's simply just no such thing as, you know, real privacy anymore when it comes to computers. So I think we should all just send naked photos of ourselves to everybody.
You know what I used to do? This was all the rage when I was in eighth grade was. When you had like a crush on a girl or something, it would be like we'd always call each other, right? And then to fuck with people, we'd call them and get them to talk about girls they like in class.
Yeah.
Without telling them that the girl is on the line.
Holy my God, you do that?
Oh, I did it all the time, and I was also the victim of it. Many a time as well. And
wow.
It was it got to be a little chaotic because it was like it was happening all the time. And so I thought it was hilarious, whether I was at or I was the one propagating this horrible thing.
And?
But it didn't ever end too badly.
And so you would do this, and the girl would be on the line, and what would happen afterwards?
Oh, you'd reveal it on the phone. You'd be like, John, blah, 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 is on the phone. And then you'd hear the girl laugh. And then it's like, oh, shit. And then sometimes you try to play it off like you knew.
No, but how does that ever turn out? Did they just
Everyone was kind of cool about it. It was like, whatever.
Okay.
If the person liked someone, maybe this was the beginning point. You're always awkward
Has that ever happened? Have like relationships ever come from these pranks?
Oh, maybe someone's calling me right now.
Uh-oh. This could be a prank. This could be your secret admirer, John.
No, it's a 2-1-12 number. I guarantee it's not even a real call. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hi there. Hello? That was actually somebody.
I hate that.
Yeah.
At least, like...
I think I know who that was, too.
Who?
I think it was someone lining up an interview for me, actually.
Call them back.
Well, maybe they'll call back, or they have my email. It's podcast time.
It's suspenseful.
We should have recorded this. This is a good chance. Welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting chatting about lots of different things. How are you doing, Wei?
Doing all right,
as
man.
You look at your phone right now, are you worried about anything that might be in there?
No,
I'm not hacking it.
No, I'm not. I'm not. Sorry, that's rude of me. My notes are actually on my phone, but I was actually looking at Facebook. So I was actually being
What's happening on Facebook today?
Mm,
one of our friends had a baby.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
Congratulations to our friend who we shouldn't name because that's sort
DZ.
Of
DZ.
Like, you shouldn't even say that, man.
Why?
Because how many DZs do
What
you
are
think
we ruining? What are we? Is it a spoiler? He had a kid?
Yeah, but some people don't. I mean, I don't know if he wants to.
I think it's pretty cool that he had a baby on Labor Day.
Yeah, it was really cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to have that joke forever now. When were you born? Labor Day.
Huh. Huh. That's really funny.
But his birthday isn't always going to land on Labor Day. Because it's always... The Monday stays the same, but the date does not.
Yeah. Okay. So. Great. What were we talking about? I forget.
Oh, yeah. People being on the phone line and stuff.
Okay.
Didn't you do any fun stuff in 8th grade like that?
I've never... I think my friends and I were too cheap to, do three-way calling. So we've never... Nor did we ever...
Star 69? Was that to find out who called you?
Yeah. Yeah. Nor did we, know many girls to pull those pranks on. So we never really did that.
The best story ever. I hope I haven't told this on the podcast, but maybe I have. My good pal Neil. Just the best story ever, where he was over at a bunch of friends' houses, and they were playing GoldenEye.
Yeah.
Have I told the story?
No, you haven't. No.
And they're playing GoldenEye, and I think some alcohol might have been involved as well. This was they would have been high school age. So they're playing GoldenEye, and one of them is on the phone prank calling people and calls 911 all of a sudden. And before realizing it, the person is 911 emergency. And the person is freaking out and just holding it there. Oh shit, I called 911. And as my friend's playing GoldenEye, it's four player, right at the time when he's got the line on. Oh, he shot me! They dispatched an officer to the house to check on it, and they had to explain that they were playing GoldenEye. But wow. I think they were drunk and playing GoldenEye, and someone dialed 911. And an officer actually showed up.
Well, on behalf of as a taxpayer, I want to thank your friend for wasting that money.
Wow, I'm sure everything turned out fine. Oh, funny man. Story, though.
That's hilarious.
First time, my friend tells stories great, and when he told me that story, I had tears in my eyes.
Such great timing, and it almost makes me suspect that it might be made up, but it's okay.
It's a good story.
Yeah.
You know what also is a good story? The story of Juggalo Championship, later Championship Wrestling, the Gathering of the Juggalos, 2012, from Cave in Rock, Illinois. Exciting stuff.
The Gathering of the Juggalos. Have you been to one of these?
No, I have not. And
you haven't?
I don't think it would be my cup of tea. Would you want to go to one of these?
I would.
This is like a 5-day event.
Yeah, I don't think I'd stay for the whole thing. I'd drop by for just to.
This is in the outskirts of who knows where. No phone service here.
So this, from what I know of it, it's the Juggalos, of course, are fans of the band the Insane Clown Posse. But I mean, to say to be a fan of this band is one thing, but to be a Juggalo, it's almost you're part of a cult.
Yeah, it's like a religion for
apparently
these people.
They're actually. Recognized as a gang, they were classified as a gang,
and they got some great publicity out of that
in Michigan. And
didn't they sue the government to
have
this declassification?
Yeah,
yeah,
because they were the government classified them as a gang, and they didn't consider themselves that. They're simply just a band of like-minded people who shared a similar taste in music, I suppose. And it made it very difficult for them to sell tickets because you weren't supposed to you can't sell tickets to a gang related affair.
Yeah.
But I don't know what ended up happening with that. But anyway, the Gathering of the Juggalos is essentially sort of their big festival that they hold annually in Michigan,
Illinois.
Oh, in Illinois. Okay. Well, whatever. They do things. They do Juggalo activities.
Yes. They had that infamous incident a few years ago with Tila Tequila.
Oh, yeah.
Where she got pelted and was taking her top off to try and silence the booers. And it was not a good scene.
You sure they weren't saying whoop whoop?
Well, that's what a great out. What a great idea for a promotion. You can never say it's a bad crowd reaction because you have that as your out, whether they're booing or not.
Uh-huh.
They're saying whoop whoop.
They're saying whoop whoop. Anyway, so this event, I guess they do every year, Strangle Mania, or what is it, Bloody Mania?
Bloody Mania.
They do it at the Gathering of the Juggalos.
Yes.
And they also hold shows on their own, too, right, outside of this?
Yeah, they do shows out in Michigan and stuff, but this is their big show of the year.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the one thing about ICP is they have created this unbelievable subculture.
Yeah.
Like, of ICP fans, and have extended it into all these different areas of entertainment, mm-hmm. and having this one big gathering.
It's hard to think of a musical act in any genre that's been able to amass a following as loyal as theirs. You know, so that in itself, I'd say, is quite an accomplishment as musicians.
And without being, like, ever having a mainstream hit or mm-hmm. being... I mean, they've always kind of just been on the underground of things. Yeah. And it's not like they ever had one big brush with superstardom on a reality show or anything huge. It's just been consistent touring and albums and delving into pro wrestling and appearing sporadically on pro wrestling promotions.
I wonder where they are. Yeah, and I wonder if, like, their most mainstream exposure has come from pro wrestling. You know, from the Attitude Era runs, and also WCW and whatnot. Because I'm trying to think what else. I mean, they've been on Howard Stern many times, and I suppose like 2020. Like, I'm sure they've done stories on them, but I wonder. But it's probably just from the music itself. I mean, that's kind of what they always, you know, champion is the fact that they represent outcasts and that they represent the underground. So to have a mainstream hit would almost be a negative.
And marketed themselves just tremendously with their merchandise and the look of them. It's just been this great fandom that they've created for themselves. So if you think I'm going to knock this event, I am not, because I think it's goddamn impressive. Just this show, and we'll get into the actual show, but how about the production values of this show? Like, this blows away Ring of Honor.
Okay, I don't know about blows away.
I could see the ring all night long. It blew it away for me.
This was, I mean...
Multi-cameras.
It seemed like an iPay-per-view type of production. Absolutely. I wouldn't say... It's definitely not TNA level. It's not
ROH level either.
Okay, depending on the ROH. So certainly the fact that they have an overhead lighting, basically a bracket, definitely an improvement.
You can see people.
Over
ROH.
Yep. But... Whatever. They had a jib, you know, so one thing. But it's not like it was perfect, you know. There's certainly a lot left to be
Which decided. I think was fine for an event of this. I was not expecting WWE-level production, no. But I thought it was above your typical independent-level production.
I'll agree there. Yeah, sure.
Which is where I would classify ROH these days.
Mm-hmm.
So the show starts off. This did air as an iPay-per-view back in 2012. Inside of a touring bus where we find Vampiro, who cuts a promo on Colt Cabana, who he's going to be taking on later tonight.
This was a paintless Vampiro, and I've never seen Vampiro without paint.
A very exhausted-looking Vampiro.
A very old-looking Vampiro, but I mean, you know, I guess the paint hides a lot.
He just looked exhausted here. He talks about how Cabana has taken advantage of his family and the Juggalo army. Cabana wants to deport Vampiro. He says... I hate authority, crooked policemen, and motherfuckers like you. And he doesn't want to just win this match. He wants to hurt Cabana, who can't call CM Punk to help him out here. And we panned up to the ceiling as we cut away from inside the tour bus.
Mm-hmm.
Excited.
Yeah. He was talking about Colt Cabana as his opponent. But I had no idea what Colt's character was.
Oh, you were not familiar with Officer Colt Cabana. Not very different from the Cabana you're probably used to.
Yeah, not at all.
The adult version of Colt Cabana, if you can call it that. We had this awesome intro video, which broke numerous copyright infringements, just flat out showing WWE footage of Carlito, Chris Masters, Bobby Lashley, Scott Steiner, John Morrison, The Hurricane, who wasn't even on the card, and Matt Hardy. So, just tons of footage here. And it's not like they were even tiptoeing around it. They would use their theme music later on in the show.
Their names.
Yeah. They did not give a fuck about any of this. Which, typically, if you're an indie show, you can get around. Once you're broadcasting it on any kind of a platform, you're really rolling the dice.
Right, that's right. And this was broadcast on iPay-per-view?
iPay-per-view.
And, of course, DVDs afterwards. Well, what are they going to do? I suppose the WWE, if they really wanted to, I'm sure
they could make their lives a little miserable if they had chosen to.
They're part of. They've got a little mini empire. Maybe the WWE will buy this for their network.
Maybe this could be content for the network. Yeah. Yeah, I could see Kevin Gill and Shaggy 2 Dope easily segueing their way over to SmackDown one day.
Yeah, maybe Too Tough Tony.
We just saw this fucking match on Monday night. No one gives a fuck. Kevin Gill and Shaggy 2 Dope.
Please welcome the JCW announce team. KG, Kevin Gill, and Shaggy 2 Dope.
What the fuck is going on? Gathering up the Juggalos. Can I get a whoop whoop up in this motherfucker? My name is KG, the sometimes garbled voice of JCW, and we're about to bring you the illest, livest, dopest, sickest card you've seen in your life. Why? Because we are the illest Juggalo Championship Wrestling shit you ever saw. I fucked it up, but my man DJ Clay is the heartbeat of JCW.
They were the stars of this show. I don't care, you know, who was on this card. To me, the draw of this show and any ICP-related wrestling material is the commentary.
Again, for this kind of a show, you maybe couldn't have two better people calling this. Uh-huh. I don't think Mike Tenay could have pulled off this broadcast.
Well, I know, like, one of the things we always harp on about commentary is when people, like, you know, for instance, a Taz, when he doesn't take wrestling seriously, when he starts to, you know, like, make jokes in the middle of the commentary. This was all jokes in the middle of the commentary, but at the same time,
I didn't feel they were mocking the product.
This was Juggalo Championship Wrestling. Like, this is, like, you watch the show wanting to hear the humor of a guy like a Shaggy 2 Dope, you know what I mean? And I thought they were funny.
Anytime a color commentator can decipher between a worked and a shoot kick, I'm all for it.
It's
that was real. This was a very fun show, yeah, as we will begin this. We just cut to a hard camera, no commentary, and an empty ring, which featured a great pickup from some member of the audience who was clearly right next to the mic, just said, "I smell dog shit."
I miss that.
Some fan. Okay. And then we had this elaborate countdown from 10 into an intro on a loudspeaker. We had the guest DJ, DJ Clay, who came out to either booze or chance of whoop whoop, mm-hmm, one of the two. And then they introduced the announce team, the aforementioned Kevin Gill and Shaggy 2 Dope. And Gill does an intro. They eventually got their mics working on the commentary desk. And they set up the fact that this is the fifth of their five-day gathering. And then we got to meet the in-house ring girls, and we were introduced to the ass of Natalie that you're seeing, which the announcers brought us up to speed with.
Mm-hmm.
So 2 Dope says tonight is going to, quote, squash a lot of shit live. That was our promise for tonight. We'll find out if squash would be shit would be squashed live. And we kick things off with a four-team elimination tag match for the tag titles with champions the Ring Riders, Red Rider and Blue Rider.
JCW Originals?
Tag team champions. Taking on an eclectic bunch of tag teams.
I'll say.
I would say every entrance was better than the rest leading up to the reveal of the final team.
The great thing about watching the show is that I didn't really like read the match list.
Nor did
anything.
I.
So
everything was a surprise to me too.
Every entrance, it just became like, who is going to show up on this Juggalo Championship Wrestling Bloody Fucking Mania show, as they call it. Bloody Fucking Mania. And it would be just the most unexpected cast of characters from the wrestling world.
We had the Headbangers, Mosh and Thrasher.
That one kind of makes sense.
Sure, yeah, sure.
Musicians.
Who, 2 Dope mentioned, had straight beef with them. Shoot.
Mm-hmm.
So some problems with ICP back in the WWF days. The team of Necro Butcher and Madman Pondo, who were in this match for a cup of coffee, and then the Rock and Roll Express, Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson. Richard Morton no more. He was back to Ricky from WrestleMore 92 to Bloody Mania 6.
I would just like to imagine the drive up to the gathering of the Juggalos as you ride in a car with Ricky Morton and
Robert Gibson.
Robert Gibson.
As here. Ricky Morton is probably telling him, keep your eye on the road. to Robert Gibson's wandering eye, which was brought up in this match.
Do you think they listen to ICP's music, these two? Do you think they're
wouldn't surprise you. Listen, the Rock and Roll Express do a lot of just indies. Anyone that will pay these guys, they do shows. So they're not exactly the most selective clients out there. But still funny to see them in this environment.
It's hilarious to see, and just the amount of jokes about their mullets, about the lazy eyes. On the commentary.
When you multiply a mullet by a lazy eye, you have He-Man-like strength, Kevin Gill said.
That to me was the draw of this match.
Well, the match begins after Shaggy explains the legit heat they had with the Headbangers back in the day. Butcher is on the way to the ring where he's hitting himself in a chair and already bleeding from the forehead before he even enters the ring. Mm-hmm. Gill says that the Ring Riders are champions because they are the shit. And then we had referee Drew Carey. This was where Morton hit Butcher with a, quote, shoot knee lift.
By the way, he's just a guy that looks like Drew Carey.
It was not actually Drew Carey, though it wouldn't have surprised me.
Well, he's a Hall of Famer.
With some of the talent they brought in here. Yeah. Morton hits this double clothesline to the Butcher and Pondo. The power of the brittle bone. And then the Rock and Roll Express hit a double dropkick and eliminate Pondo and Butcher just minutes into the match. Then Thrasher hit a knee to the back of Morton, and he was eliminated with Gibson. So, four of the eight here gone in pretty quick fashion in about 2 minutes. A great night's work for the old-timers. And they cut to Kevin Gill, who was pouring a drink of some substance from a thermos at the announce desk. This was match number one, as he was already hitting the liquids. I just took a lot of quotes throughout this particular show.
Yes.
They're fucking like snipers now, but with fists in the ring, describing the Headbangers. Mosh is attacking the left arm of Red Ryda. Gill then talks about how the worldwide media is not realizing the fans are saying whoop whoop. They are not booing the top talent that is here at the Gathering of the Juggalos. And Ryda Blue hit a standing moonsault on the floor to Thrasher. Gill notes the millions watching around the world, and then Red Ryder hits a suicide dive to Thrasher on the floor. Mosh gets a belt and hits Ryder Blue with it, and then the referee is distracted as Ryder Red hits a belt shot of his own, and they pin Thrasher. This match went about 13 minutes. The Ring Riders retain the JCW tag titles. The regular members of the roster keep the tag titles. I won't say there was one good match on this particular show.
No, not at all.
It was really about entrances, lines in the commentary, and just absurd shit in the ring. So maybe that's how we should be assessing these matches.
This was not a New Japan pro wrestling, man. Far from it. But was it entertaining? I'd say for the most part it was.
Now, how long did it take you to watch this show? As I said on Monday night, I watched this thing in one sitting on a Sunday.
As did I.
Wow, one sitting.
Yeah.
Did you become a juggalo by the end of this?
No.
Not quite.
Not really.
So they retain the tag titles. Shaggy says that the Ring Riders are now going to go get lit up, get some skins, and a titty bath or two, and have a reverse cowgirl with a girl's hand. So beware if there are any cell phones. I guess they didn't have phone signals here, so they couldn't be taking video and sending it out of any of this this carnal activity in their post-match celebration. They showed footage from the gathering with the Juggalettes. Their words, not mine. Some bitches on a water slide. And this is where they mentioned that there's no phone service here, and Google Earth cannot find this place.
Oh, wow.
They are off the face of the earth here in Cave in Rock, Illinois.
This looked kind of fun. It just looked like they rented a giant campground to hang out with a bunch of their fans, you know?
I liked watching this on iPay-Per-View. I don't know if I would want to experience this, especially for 5 days.
I think you could pull off a Juggalo look.
I think anyone can pull off a Juggalo look.
I don't know if I could. I think you'd almost look like Shaggy Too Dope.
Yeah, perhaps. And you would be a Violent Way. You'd need to put on some weight, though. And dye that hair.
And
then come out and cut a promo about some real shit.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had Dirty Dan come out. There was a lot of kind of nonsense, just dead time between matches, where we just had to watch Dirty Dan giving shit out to the crowd.
This was a live show, right?
It was, but it was an iPay-Per-View as well. So keep the shit moving, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I doubt they think that deeply about production.
Well, I'm going to assess it as such. Up Chuck the Clown was then out as their ring announcer. He comes out with the ring card girl to announce the next match, and his voice cracked here during this entrance. And this is
the least of their concerns. You think they should have redone it?
Listen, Up Chuck the Clown has some credibility to maintain. Yeah. Come on. And then what felt like was going to be the main event of the show was the second match on the card. Officer Colt Cabana against Vampiro. And the announcers accused Colt Cabana of being a racist, a pedophile, and a turd tickler. Cabana comes out with his big flashlight. And his gimmick, essentially, is that he is the anti-juggalo. He is here to make arrests, crack down on drug use, and uphold the moral code when he himself is a degenerate. And he cuts a promo.
It has been an Olympic year for the police department here at the Gathering of the Juggalos. I have this year received a gold medal in juggalette raping.
What? A gold medal for rape?
I have received a gold medal in smuggling pot and arresting juggalos throughout the campus.
Saying that this has been an Olympic year for the police at the Gathering, he has received a gold medal in juggalette raping.
I'm sure in the context of whatever reference that is to, it makes sense to the initiated.
A heel bragging about raping.
Yeah. To the uninitiated, it definitely, we'll have to ask him. You should ask Colt.
That'll be our next chat with Colt. So hey. Chat a bit about the Officer Colt character.
And your gold medal for...
Yes. Did you send this in to WWE Developmental during your last tryout? He has a gold medal in smuggling pot and making arrests. As the fans are throwing garbage at Cabana, he calls Vampiro sleazy and scum, and that he is high, drunk, and fucked up at the moment, and he's going to deport him and arrest everybody.
It was a lot of fun to see Colt Cabana, who's usually, you know, about as... He's this kid-friendly comedy wrestler in any other situation, but in this setting, he's the biggest heel on the card, and it was fun to see him, like, you know, just... It's not even like he put, like, a ton of effort into changing his the thing. He just basically found some vest, cap with the word police on it, like, used a marker to draw a stripe down his khaki pants, and, like... He became the biggest heel on the show. Change his name. He just put the name Officer Colt Cabana together.
Yes. And let's give a plug to our buddy Colt. He actually, I don't know if it was this year's or the 2013 version, but he did a audio documentary of attending the Gathering of the Juggalos.
Okay.
That is up on his digital site. So for $2, you can hear about Officer Colt Cabana navigating the Gathering of the Juggalos.
Mm-hmm.
Vampiro comes out to his theme song that was off the WCW Mayhem CD, which I sadly bought when I was 14 years old.
Probably the only person to recognize.
Amazing. He comes out with the the icon of JCW, the Great Evil Dead. I believe the first JCW champion.
You do this? You do this?
No, I relied on the announcers for the background info on the Great Evil Dead.
Yes. He's basically a zombie character.
Yes, who is dead. His gimmick is he is legitimately dead.
He's like, I mean, like The Undertaker.
Exactly, like The Undertaker.
Yeah.
He's the icon. Vampiro cuts a promo and brings up this catchphrase that got over where he one day said the words, "Magic, magic, ninja what?" Which, when Wei Ting has a bad day, he is often known to yell out in furious anger at work. Magic, magic, ninja what? And leads to a big chant for the Evil Dead character. Vampiro admits he is high and fucked up on drugs right now, which I would take to be completely legitimate, and explains the promo, and this leads to Cabana jumping him from behind to start off the match. A dreadful performance here by one Vampiro. I would completely believe he is either in horrendous physical shape or on drugs or on both. He moved around painfully slow.
It's that, but I also feel like there's far less precedent set on performing a quality match.
You should not be killing yourself on this show.
No, not at all. I don't see many people, you know.
Unless you are a young upstart tag team for later on, taking on Vader and Scott Steiner.
Oh, yeah, that's
Jesus
right.
Jesus Christ, where a criminal act takes place.
So it could simply be, you know, a case of him kind of knowing that this audience doesn't really care about great work rate anyway, so why even try?
The match is going on. Vampiro has a headlock. Cabana takes him down with a clothesline and is, quote, trying to rip the jaw off of Vampiro, which would be a hell of a task. And explains that you have to take drugs with... The announcers are giving a PSA that it's okay to take drugs, but you have to take the proper recommended dosages for you kids out there. Mm-hmm. Great message. Vampiro, awkward landings. He fights back, punches, kicks. The referee takes away Cabana's flashlight that he tries to use as a weapon. There's a cross body off the top, and then the shittiest super kick that Shaggy acknowledges did not quite land. Evil Dead then bites the neck of Cabana on the floor because you see when you turn a human into a vampire, they cannot talk any longer. So they're trying to take away Colt Cabana's ability to speak. And
what?
The Evil Dead was trying to bite the neck of Cabana and turn him into a zombie.
So he couldn't talk.
Yeah, because zombies can't talk.
Okay.
And Vampiro is unable to run at this stage of his career, as we saw here on the floor. Cabana comes into the ring with Evil Dead, turns around into a super kick, and the dreaded DDT by Evil Dead, which they said no one has ever gotten up from, and Vampiro pins Officer Colt at 5 minutes and 49 seconds.
There you go. Match quality certainly not even doesn't really deserve to be commented on here. It's really more about the spectacle, and I think the overall feeling that's appealing about this is that it feels like you're simply watching your friends get dressed up as these ridiculous characters and having goofy matches. The whole thing
is almost more like a theater show. You know what I mean? Yeah,
it felt like sort of like a backyard wrestling federation, but with guys like Vampiro and Colt Cabana and Ricky Morton there.
Richard. Yes. Vampiro shakes the hands of the announcers, who then proceed to use Purell, which was the smartest move of the night.
Shaggy 2-Dope then starts talking about how he's going to break kayfabe right now, and he starts to talk about how wrestlers, anytime he's tried to shake their hand, wrestlers refuse to shake your hand hard.
The dead fish.
And he calls it like, he alluded to like, you know, shaking a wrestler's hand as being similar to like holding a limp penis.
Yes. Have you ever experienced the wrestler handshake?
I'm sure I have. I didn't notice whether it was, you know.
I think the first time I was ever in a locker room, I didn't know what the protocol was. Because I was very familiar with the wrestler handshake. But I'm like, I'm not a worker. Because the whole idea is that by having this limp hand, it means you work well in the ring. You don't work stiff. Like, you're giving them a stiff handshake.
Okay.
So I'm like, I'm not a worker. I should be giving a stiff handshake because I'd be a shitty worker in the ring. So I just always have done the normal handshake.
And what has been the response?
I've never had a response. I think everyone thinks this is the stupidest thing ever.
But I mean, how hard is the handshake you get in return?
Sometimes I've had, like you think the person doesn't even have bones in their hand. Wow. It's just like, this is silly. This is a silly tradition. Yeah. We could move on from this very easily. It's like the idea of getting to backstage and you're supposed to go up to every single person and introduce yourself. Like that, I would not get past that point. That to me would be my... I don't care if I was fucking Ricky Morton 1985. Yeah. I would not be able to do that deal. Go up to all these strangers and say hello and hi, I'm Joe Shitface.
I'd be really bad at that.
I'd be terrible. I'd have heat in a second. I'd be sent out.
Definitely.
That's why we're not workers. Mm-hmm. So after the handshake rant, Dirty Dan is giving more stuff out. And as they have this dead time, the announcers tell us, this is raw. This is uncut. As we watch the 1,000th ICP poster handed out to a fan. The way raw and uncut was a nice way of saying, we're not editing this shit.
Yeah.
Then Commissioner Violent J comes out. Gives out a Booker T shucky ducky quack quack to the crowd, which this was in the heyday of Booker T on SmackDown, I believe, and puts over the gathering. Thanks everyone for coming. This is the first time I have ever heard a chant of family begin amongst a wrestling crowd.
Well, did they chant that?
They were chanting family, family. I mean, you might paint the Juggalos as like these masochistic fans, and really they try to push the opposite. Like when we had Violent J on the show a few years ago, they really push upon that we're not these fucking gangsters that are out there. We're all just people that have very similar interests in life. And we hang out with each other because it's cool. And they really try to push that. And I'm sure there is a kind of line in the middle. I'm sure there's some nutcases at these events. But this whole show, they really try to push the, you don't have to feel like an outcast here.
Yeah.
It's a cool vibe they've created if you are a fan of this.
Definitely.
This kind of culture.
Well, there are nutcases anywhere. You go to, I mean, nutcases at any wrestling show.
Of course. So then he goes on to explain that Corporal Robinson, who was a part of the ICP camp and Psychopathic Records right from the beginning, is no longer associated with them. The crowd starts chanting, "He fucked up." And then they move on that there will not be a match tonight between Corporal Robinson and the Rude Boy. And then we move on. This is some legit falling out, and I don't know all the particulars, but if you go on YouTube, there is a video from Corporal Robinson that I clicked on and couldn't get past the first 30 seconds of. So if you want to go investigate, be my guest. And then he goes on to list the countries that this is available in, including the countries of Portuguese and Norwegia. I loved it. Norwegia. Violent J, everybody.
These guys are just funny.
Well, it got better. Up next, we had a really unique concept, a unique spin on the Battle Royal, a Rumble Royale.
Rumble Royale.
Where a new participant would come in every 2 minutes. This is the match I wish I didn't see that video at the beginning of the participants and could just be surprised at each entrant, because they had some great surprises if you didn't know who was coming out. Which was all the fun of this match, which was a pretty lengthy match. Drawing number one in the huge 8-man Rumble Royale was Shockwave the Robot. I was all ready for this match at the sight of Shockwave the Robot.
What's the story with this guy? Is he an indie wrestler that's...
Never seen this guy before this match. Okay. I'm not familiar with him at all. Came out, just appeared to be an indie guy with a great gimmick.
No, he's a robot.
Of course.
He's a robotic robot, as they describe.
And he was, like, powering down and then would be short-circuiting during the match while he's selling.
I mean, there have been many robot gimmicks. You know, there have been many models of the robot in independent wrestling circles. But this one was good. He had a pretty, like, professional-looking outfit.
He looked like
a robot.
Yeah, it didn't look like shit.
Like Osimo.
It reminded me of Kevin the Robot.
Who's that?
Another Saved by the Bell reference there. That's Screech's robot.
Oh, right, okay.
Which was very intelligent. It was like an actual human robot. It had a brain.
How many Saved by the Bell references do you think?
I don't know. I just finished that movie this morning. So
you fit in one more before the end of the review?
We'll find out. We'll
try, okay.
Find out. Number two was Carlito using his WWE theme music, or as the key read, Kalito.
That's how he got by the copyright.
Didn't have to. Kalito.
Dropped the R.
Shockwave is rebooting himself and powered back up after he was knocked down by Kalito, and then drives Carlito's head into the turnbuckle and hits a tilt-a-whirl leg scissors, and then Carlito hits a low blow to Shockwave.
What's his name?
I love this Shockwave.
Shockwave,
gimmick.
He is really good. Really good at. I mean,
this is a great indie gimmick.
The whole gimmick's based off of being able to do the robot, and this guy did the robot pretty well.
I think this would get tired fast on a major league promotion, but for an indie promotion, I think this is a great gimmick, and anyone could play it. Really,
he was almost wrestling like a monster, he's a smaller guy, but he was wrestling almost like as a giant monster because he was made of metal, you see, and it's hard to hurt him or hit his head.
Have a lot of fun with this.
Yeah.
Number three was X-Pac, who goes after both men and hits a Bronco Buster to Shockwave and Carlito. There's this terrible low blow spot delivered to X-Pac. Basically hit the side of his knee. Fourth was Zach Gowen out to It's My Life by Bon Jovi.
Like, was that a joke? Or is that his actual theme music?
That's what he came out to. I guess this is what really gets him going. There's a drop kick off the second turnbuckle to Carlito, and they explained that Zach Gowen and Shockwave are actually partners who had partnered up a few nights earlier at the gathering at another show they did. Carlito goes for the figure four spot onto Gowen, but cannot complete it.
Because he only has one leg.
And Shaggy calls it a figure two. Not really a figure two.
Well, figure one.
Fifth into the match was current TNA champion Bobby Lashley.
Like, I was amazed. Like, how did they get all the money for these guys? And it was amazing that all these like kind of ex-WWE guys, who I imagine, you know, got paid probably more than Shockwave the Robot or Too Tough Tony. I wondered how they afforded them, and I just thought
they've got money. Like, these guys have money when they put this stuff on. I remember that year. Man, where they had a rep that was sending me all the updates of the talent they had for these gathering shows, and it was insane the amount of guys they had.
But it's the fact that, they're able to get all these guys with name value, but also the idea that, you know, rather than put these guys in actual matches, we're just going to make them surprise entrants in this Rumble Royale and have them appear for maybe, I don't know, two, 3 minutes.
Then it was Eugene, who came out with silly string that he attacked people with. They had thought he had a boner, but instead it was the silly string down his trunks. And Shaggy, showing great restraint in this PC world, denoted Eugene's retard strength that he brought to the match. Chris Masters was out seventh, and this is where they talked about never using a wrestler's bathroom because of their protein intake. And eighth was the Weed Man, who came out, who had suffered...
Chris Weedman.
And he had severe burns to his face, and you didn't want to see his bubbly face.
Could you imagine if...
I liked how they all had backstories, even if they were probably made up on the fly.
Yeah, okay, but could you imagine if you're like, Chris Masters or Carlito... A couple of years
what
ago,
am I doing here?
You're performing it at a stadium WrestleMania. All of a sudden, you're sharing the ring with Weed Man and Shockwave.
The Weed Man.
Shockwave the Robot.
Shockwave actually got eliminated during the entrance of the Weed Man. And then music starts, and the announcers announce there is a special added entrant. In ninth was the Rude Boy, who was left without a match after things fell apart with Corporal Robinson. So we had eight guys in the ring here. Eugene got tossed out. Masters back body dropped X-Pac to the floor. Gowen is selling on the floor with an injured hand, but not eliminated. Masters sends out Rude Boy, and then it's Weed Man against the ex-WWE guys. Masters accidentally sends out Carlito. Weed Man then clotheslines Masters out, turns around, gets speared by Lashley, who tosses out Weed Man. He thinks he's won, but Gowen is still in the match. They fight on the apron. Lashley then clotheslines him into the ring, goes for a running power slam, and then Gowen applies a guillotine from the outside of the apron, the identical Chris Benoit Big Show only elimination we can do with an undersized guy to a giant for a battle royal finish. And Zach Gowen wins this match that went over 20 minutes, and he has now won back-to-back Rumble Royales at the Gathering of the Juggalo events. And Gowen gets on the microphone and tells the crowd that dreams come true.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Zach Gowen.
Zach Gowen taking it for a second year in a row, man. Second year in a row.
Unprecedented.
Said it couldn't be done. We didn't do it just one time. We did it twice. 2 years in a row. Dreams do come true.
Well said.
I was just saying, I don't, more heartfelt could you have put that? You know what I'm saying? Too bad you don't get a bonus in your check for that or nothing like that. Because he'd be paid right now, KG.
The winner's
too bad money does not know about dreams coming true.
That's true. That is true. But Zach Gowen, I don't know if our super technical cameras can pick it up, but you can see the tears welling up in his eyes.
I see the hot one rolling his teeth there as well, but I don't blame him. That's not no pussy shit.
The dream of winning.
A lot of deep messages that came out on this Bloody Mania 6 card.
You had Kevin Gill basically bundling his winning of the Battle Royal with his beating of cancer.
One and two.
Yeah, I'm sure it definitely ranks up there. But, you know, it was all pretty poorly worked in terms of a wrestling match. Just all very boring and dull. The entertainment came from all the surprise appearances.
That's what this was. This was entrances.
It's just like, it's amazing that you had pretty much the most star-studded of the entire show in this one match, playing pretty little significance overall.
Well, none of these guys had the charisma of a too tough Tony.
Yeah.
Only one guy that could headline this card. Up next was a three-way match with Briar Wellington, a native of Hamilton, Ontario, taking on Matt Hardy, who came out with Rebby Sky, and John Hennigan, who was identified on his key as John Morrison.
But was announced as John Hennigan.
Yes. And then Shaggy Two Dope says, well, on my sheet it says John Morrison, so fuck it. That's a hell of a defense.
That'll hold up in court.
Yeah.
Sure.
Briar Wellington was referred to as Mr. Moose Knuckle himself, who his gimmick is he doesn't wear a cup. So you can see his balls all match long.
Oh, wow.
And he's been with JCW since the beginning. And Shaggy then describes John Morrison in all his Hollywood stripper gear coming out. And they explain that you cannot buy a new back if you ever get a back injury. Just ask Hulk Hogan. The match begins. Hardy applies his ice pick submission to Hennigan. They call the potato shots from Wellington. Then Hardy and Hennigan team up, double-teaming Wellington. They spit water in his face. There's a twist of fate to Wellington that got blocked, and then Hardy gets sent into Hennigan. Hennigan then blocks a twist of fate, hits a kick off the ropes, Wellington with a low blow to Hennigan. Some fan at one point threw in a 2-liter bottle of, like, peach drink into the ring. Like, this giant fucking 2-liter bottle.
It's probably Faygo.
It might have been. Hardy and Hennigan clearly didn't get the memo that you could take it easy in this match. They were, like, actually doing stuff. The finish came when they hit a backstabber to John Morrison by Wellington. Then a twist of fate is hit, and Hennigan sends Hardy to the floor, and Morrison hits the Starship Pain to pin Briar Wellington at 9 minutes and 39 seconds. After the match, Hardy and Morrison shake hands. Hardy then kicks him and hits the twist of fate, which Shaggy, apparently reading the mind of Matt Hardy, believes he's thinking to himself, I'm Matt Hardy, fuck respect, and then says that Rebby is now going to suck his dick on this pay-per-view, and then kind of catches himself and kind of backpedals, I think assuming that Matt Hardy might actually watch this at some point, and what he's describing to his girlfriend and later wife to be performing this act. But then Matt Hardy, not showing any shyness, lifts up Rebby and squeezes her ass.
Pulls up her, gives her a wedgie right in front of us.
The announcers are hoping that her panties might fall off as she makes her way to the back.
The announcers called it the twist of clam.
Classy. Very, very classy.
Very clever. Well, the crowd is pretty dead here. Like, I don't even know if they recognize
Listen, this was a long show.
Yeah.
And they did not need to be doing these lengthy matches. Like, the idea that the Battle Royal went 20 minutes and this main event went about 55, some of these matches were way too long than they needed to be. Like, this should have been, like, a 90-minute show. And I think everyone would have gotten what they needed out of these six matches.
Yeah. Traditionally, I think they wanted... Yeah, whatever. Yeah, it's fine.
Sean Summers and Roderick Street. Two men that I think we need to one day have on this show to talk about this experience. Took on Scott Steiner and Vader. This sounded like a horrible idea on paper, and it turned out to be a disaster in execution. This was at a time...
This was awesome. This is great.
Hey, if you enjoy just... There was nothing pro wrestling about this match. This was a goddamn beatdown of two young performers by two very snug performers in Scott Steiner and Vader. Steiner just attacks Roderick at the start of this, lifts him up, and just drops him upside down. The announcers suddenly realize this is a disaster that they are calling. There is a belly-to-belly to Roderick. Vader tosses a chair into the ring. Steiner knocks Sean Summers off the apron and proceeds to beat the fuck out of him with this chair into the head and cuts him open with it.
I didn't realize this was a hardcore match.
This was like a legitimate fight. Vader, a one-sided beatdown.
Like this, Vader introduced the chair into the match even before he himself had tagged in. Like even before anything of significance had happened in the match, it was almost like Vader just said, "You know, fuck all this wrestling stuff. I'm just going to throw a chair in. We're just going to beat these guys up with weapons."
Vader was receiving a rejuvenation at this time because it was 2 months before this that he appeared on Raw doing those the Heath Slater beatdowns leading up to Raw 1000. So Vader had actually been on Raw just 2 months prior to this.
Vader's he's a lot of fun to watch at indie shows.
And looked in decent shape here. I mean, this is a 50-year-old plus guy.
Yeah,
I've seen him before where his belly has gotten ridiculous and it was in control here.
Okay, in control.
And the mask helps a lot.
Oh, yeah. But I just think he's just the sight of this man in that singlet and then that mask is just such a spectacle in itself. And if you've ever seen Vader like at an indie show, he just really plays up to the crowd, you know? Like he'll just start barking at people, at fans. He's a lot of fun, especially knowing that, you know, he's not necessarily like that in real life.
Summers is bleeding from the forehead after the chair shots, which Shaggy notes he didn't even juice. This is hardway blood. There's a belly-to-belly where Summers lands right on his head by Scott Steiner. Then another belly-to-belly, this time to Roderick Street off the top rope. Vader is attacking Street with punches everywhere. This looked like Betch Kohei and Shayna Baszler from this past weekend. As the crowd is chanting Vader bomb, the announcers are just loving this. They are just, like, losing it in awe of this great match. Steiner hits a mic check to Summers. There's a Vader bomb to Street. They pin them at 519. Just an utter squash. These two poor guys just getting murdered here. And Vader takes his straps down and runs up the ramp as they exit. This was just a massacre. This reminded me of just something we would have watched from IWA Mid-South a few months ago.
Yeah.
With Necro and Joe. A lesser athletic version of that.
I'd say
just as brutal to watch.
It's more reminiscent of like those Ryback matches, you know, with the nobodies. But this was even worse than that. But
this had the suplexes on the head, though.
Yeah, this was definitely. I wonder what I mean. I'm sure the idea was just, you know, we got these two guys. Let's just put them against. Let's put our two biggest guys on the whole show against the two smallest guys, and then see what happens.
Let's see what happens.
Yeah, I mean,
this was the answer.
It was very entertaining, I found.
Well, we had both ring card girls come out for the main event, and one holds the sign up to announce main event, the other just follows her around, and we're ready for the JCW Championship title defense of Too Tough Tony defending against Kongo Kong, who we saw live at WrestleMania weekend 2013 at the Ring of Honor show, if you recall.
I don't.
Oh, he got over pretty big in a dark match for ROH.
Okay.
So, Tony, describe Too Tough Tony.
That's a tough task.
A too tough task. A heavy set man whose gimmick is he's had over 30 concussions comes out in juggalo attire, I would say. The 3/4 shorts.
In a cut-off t-shirt with cut-off sleeves.
And drinks Bacardi on his way to the ring and then pours it into fans' mouths at ringside. So kind of an extension of the Sandman. And Tony...
I'd say it's more of a... What's the opposite of extend? A collapsed version of the Sandman.
Tony is introduced as the Louisville town drunk who weighs in at 240 liters. And they describe that Tony is no bitch... And then gets attacked from behind to start the match. And Kongo is just attacking him here with drop kicks. The announcers are starting to relay the psychology of this match. Because Tony, you see, goes into all of his matches drunk as fuck. But now he also has to battle his cardio problems and being drunk at the same time. So how is he going to implement his strategy with these two obvious handicaps of being drunk and gassed? 2 minutes into this match. These are the things he has to overcome when he's doing a 19-minute match. Tony gets a chair. He uses it on Kongo. And then introduces a weapon that I just pray to God Abyss never hears about. The thumbtack bat. This is the new standard of dumbest hardcore items I have ever seen in pro wrestling.
Okay.
It's a kid's wiffle ball bat with... tacks attached around the circumference of the bat that Too Tough Tony takes in the forehead, where countless multicolored tacks are embedded into his forehead and his skull. They
look like Skittles.
That's how they described it. Taste the pain bow, they said. This looked insane. This was so stupid. The stupidest thing I might have seen in wrestling this year.
We've seen a lot of stupid.
The thumbtack bat. I can't believe Abyss hasn't done this yet. Tony stops him while he's delivering punches in the corner. Shaggy then burps while he's watching this on the commentary desk. Tony hit this like... This looked like a man that like was walking across a floor that had just been mopped and he fell with his going head over heels. And they had the gall to call this move the Pele kick. This was an insult to AJ Styles.
An insult to Pele.
This was a Pele. No, this was not a Pele kick. This was a man losing his footing and nearly breaking his back, falling over. These two had no grace amongst them. He then climbs to the second rope and... He's going for a moonsault. I think that's what he was trying.
He's going for a lion salt.
But instead, picture a moonsault, but without any rotation. So he just landed, like, upper neck, back first, onto the target. That's what this was. No athleticism at all. Then there's...
A lot of ambition, but no athleticism.
The man who carries JCW and the weight of the world on his shoulders, as Kevin Gill describes Too Tough Tony. Meanwhile, there's fireworks going off as this match is continuing. Kongo hits the Jungle Driver for a two count. Tony then gets put on a table. Kongo goes to the top and, to his credit, hits this splash from a decent distance off the top. Gets another two count. They don't call it a kick out, but rather... Too Tough Tony having a nervous twitch, which broke up the three count. Just painfully slow at this point. This match was progressing. Tony then gets off a chair and hits Kongo with a chair on the corner, power bombs him through a table off the corner. Now they cut to Shaggy, who has lit up a cigarette on the commentary desk. Kongo misses a moonsault off the top. Very impressive for someone that large. And then Tony hits the fire fist, which I had to rewind to get all of the details of. He poured Bacardi onto his fist and then lit it on fire. Vodka on his fist on fire.
Rum.
And punches Kongo in the face and pins him with the fire fist at 19 minutes. So Too Tough Tony retains his title as he suffers burns to his fist. This is one of the most ridiculous matches I've ever seen in my life. Too Tough Tony remains the JCW champion. And then the ring fills up with all the JCW regulars, including ICP, the Weed Man, the Ring Riders, Vampiro, Rude Boy. Shaggy says, "This was a 5-star match. No question." And they recap all of the action from earlier in the night, including the action of former WWE talent John Hennessy. This was unlike any review we have ever had. This was the weirdest show I've ever watched from start to finish. A JCW show through and through. What did you think of this main event, Way?
I'll be honest, I was a little tired by the end. But hearing you recap it just now, I feel the need to go back and watch it. Because it's very funny to hear you recap it.
Listen, I know most people are going to think we have this like narrow view. I am not going to diss this event because you know what? I enjoy people that go out there and they want to present wrestling completely differently. Yes. And they did this. And they had a crowd. So I'm not going to shit on this. It's not my cup of tea. It's not what I would care to watch. But there are people that do want to watch this kind of stuff. And I give them credit for trying something drastically different rather than all these shows we watch that try to be a low-rent version of a WWE or something like that.
Of a WWE or of a Japanese organization or whatever. This, I think there are a lot of people that truly love these DVDs, and I could understand why. There are just... You don't watch it for the same way you'd watch your All Japan tapes, you know? This is... just kind of entertaining for different reasons, and it's something you could just leave on the TV.
I would love to watch this with like Gordon.
Gordon would
love this. Like, wouldn't you rather show him this than, you know, some random ROH show?
I'll be honest. I think I'd rather put this on at a party, like with a bunch of friends who don't normally watch
Definitely.
Wrestling, than I would, some classic 5-star match.
I give this show 4 out of 10. That was notwithstanding. I think they have certainly created a great kind of subculture here. It's not my favorite kind of wrestling, but I can't say I hated this. I was entertained throughout. It was a little long. Some of the matches were just 20 minutes these guys should not be going for. I mean, they're just too long, a little too ambitious. But,
sure.
You know, they've got some characters the people seemed into. The cameos were well used.
I love that they put their own characters and their own quote-unquote athletes up on the same level and the same stage.
Definitely, in fact, requiring a quote-unquote.
Higher on the card than, you know, Matt Hardy or John Hennessy. So I give this show a 6 out of 10.
All right.
Pass.
Well, there you go. Those are our thoughts on JCW Bloody Mania 6, which if you enjoyed this review, you can watch this event on YouTube.
Well, I mean, you should probably actually pay for it if you want to support them, but...
Well, I think they offloaded this themselves, I think.
Is that right?
I could be wrong. I don't know. So there you go.
Whatever.
Let's get it to the feedback here. We start off with Brian Blaze. I think JCW need to put the shit back into their federation's name. Firstly, the crowd. Whoop, whoop. Like a bunch of fat, swearing, inept steam trains. Also, why is everyone dressed like they're in a 1998 Limp Bizkit video? In fact, the roster are too. And the announcers. Clearly, the gene pool is quite shallow with the juggalos. Well, this is not kind.
That's mean.
I didn't get past the first match. The Headbangers versus a variation of the stages. Jesus, this is a mean person here. I'd rather sandpaper my eyes. -5 out of 10. A very censored feedback there.
We go to Payne, who says, I haven't seen the show as of posting, but will go out of my way to watch it. I love JCW. It's hilarious. Though I wish you had picked an older show, it's odd to see a card where Sabu isn't part of it. Watch this all the way through, and I really wish you picked the show the year before. Foley on commentary was awesome. I love that Zach Gowen is undefeated in Battle Royals. If you think about it, I don't think he can technically be eliminated.
Very true.
Don't both feet have to touch the ground? Decent commentary throughout, and my favorite matchup was the Morrison-Hardy match. I also can't believe what good shape Carlito is in. I'd give it 7 out of 10 on a JCW scale, a 5 out of 10 on a wrestling scale.
I will say right now, at some point, I totally want to watch the JCW's Bloody Mania 5. I think.
Why? What else is on that card?
I think that they had a ton of names that year, as I recall.
Okay.
These are fun events to do every
now
and then.
Yeah, I'll do another one.
Brad from Whitby. Back in the late 90s, I was actually a casual fan of ICP. I even burned a couple of mix CDs of their stuff. After watching this, I've realized just how far away I was from an actual juggalo. I always thought their everyone is welcome attitude and we are all family outlook was something to respect and give ICP credit for. But this show totally changed my mind on that. The audience didn't give a shit about any of the wrestlers' safety, constantly hurling full cans of bottles of beer and Faygo into the ring. Besides the foreign objects, these fans contributed nothing to the show except a haze of weed smoke and ugliness. For the actual show, I can't believe how much horribly sloppy and uninspired wrestling we got. I realized something very quickly based on Shaggy Tudope's constant awareness and laughter at botched moves that this wasn't going to be a real wrestling show. He has attached his name to this, paying these wrestlers at least some half-decent money to get in their ring, and not give a fuck. So if he was fine with this, so was I. That's the only way I was able to get through this show. Even with that mindset, going through the first four matches was tough. But I was rewarded with match 5. Scott Steiner and Vader versus 2 JCW jobbers. Now I'm just as opposed to unprotected chair shots and dangerous moves as John is. But man, I needed this match. With the main event, I'm not even going to complain. This was the closest thing to an actual match as we got. My Scott Putski nominees for the show would be Bobby Lashley, Chris Masters, and Scott Steiner. I'll give the show 2 bitches on water slides out of 10. Looking forward to the anniversary show.
Jeff from Vancouver. I own this on DVD and have seen it a few times. I admit it's no polished product, and the in-ring talent on the card is pretty much whoever they could afford to hire. But I have to say, I really don't think everything was as bad as some of the other comments suggest. ICP get very heavily criticized for nearly everything they do, and as a wrestling fan, to see Colt Cabana, Matt Hardy, John Morrison, X-Pac, Lashley, Vader, Scott Steiner, and other fairly big-name guys on a damn near indie show isn't that bad of a card. I've heard plenty of interviews with ICP talking about wrestling, including on Colt Cabana's podcast, Review Away, Stranglemania, etc., and it's very obvious they have a deep passion for it. The show feels like somebody threw a party and had wrestling going on if anybody was interested in watching. I found the commentary funny throughout, with Shaggy Two Dope and Kevin Gill with their voices blown right out and making some pretty funny small talk during the show. Tag match was good once it got down to the Ring Riders versus Headbangers with some decent spots until the end. Colt Cabana was super creepy as Officer Colt, and Violent J is at his midway point in weight from when they left TNA to now, where he's comfortably in the 400-pound range. The thing about Corporal Robinson leaving JCW was a real announcement, as he was selling fake tickets to the gathering and was caught, which came out later, unfortunate seeing he was a good JCW talent. Shockwave the Robot was funny, great that the graphics spelled okay, it goes on pretty long with the whole review. Peter, he says, I give this show 5 whips out of 10. May I suggest ICP, Take Me Home for the exit song, unless there's something else planned.
All right. Adam from the UK. This was my first viewing experience of a JCW event with the show titled Bloody Mania, plus the Category 1 swear words used by the announcers. I like that. Category 1. I was expecting something reminiscent of ECW. What I watched, however, was below par in ring work and drunk, drugged juggle losers. Some mean people, man. Like, I can understand if you don't like this, but just, like, attacking the fans for how they look, I think that's kind of shitty.
That's...
At least the main event did live up to the vibe of the show, and I did laugh out loud when Carlito attempted to figure four Zach Gowan. Most of the matches were slow and basic in the extreme. As a retired worker, I was disgusted by the actions of Scott Steiner in his tag match, but I'm sure it gave the boys backstage a good laugh. Different can sometimes be good, but sadly not on this occasion. 2 wrestling robots out of 10.
Babos from Manchester. I have been listening to The Law for about 6 months since it was recommended to me by longtime listeners, the Notorious H.I.G. and the Big Chief, but this is the first time I have left feedback. I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years and have watched hours and hours of utter garbage, but nothing quite at this level. The quality of the matches was low, especially all the sloppy finishes, but the worst bit had to be the painful gaps between matches. Drove me insane. Perfect way to spend a Sunday morning. 2 Gollum Goth Trolls out of 10.
Christian Small writes, honestly, this wasn't worth watching. This was really a show for ICP to have a nostalgic trip down memory lane. We got no backstory for any match, so it came off as just a random indie show as a result. I could not stand Kevin Gill and Shaggy Two Dope by the end of this show. It really came off as them just dicking around and trying to make each other laugh. It was also really painful listening to them repeating the same point over and over in between matches because they had to kill time. The only thing that got me interested was the Corporal Robinson situation, as I have no clue what happened there. Overall, I have to give the show 2 out of 10.
2 thumbs out of 10.
2 thumbs out of 10.
Lee Russell. Wrestling. How does it work? The IPC have no idea.
Those dreaded insane posses of clowns.
They approach it as poorly as they do their music. At times this was Heroes of Wrestling bad. The entire card consisted of a lot of names from back in the day and indie guys they could buy for cheap. The commentary was terrible, not doing the already poor in-ring action any favors. If anything, seeing some of my favorite wrestling heroes of the past sully their reputations while Shitty Two Dope and the other chucklehead made fun of the product made me feel embarrassed to be a wrestling fan. In short, even with the Bill Watts era in full force, Beach Blast 92 was the better option for this week. A far superior product top to bottom.
This is the most angry feedback we've ever gotten to a particular show.
I almost feel like I know in some small way what it means to be a juggalo.
Listen, if I had to watch this every week, I would hate this. But a once a year show?
No, don't even defend. Don't even feel the need to defend it. I love all this.
Chris in Ottawa. Good Lord God Almighty. Bloody Mania 6 is Heroes of Wrestling, drenched in Faygo and without any of the charm. The only thing we learned from watching this is that the lowest forms of human life attend and produce Juggalo Championship Wrestling. John Pollock, if your objective this week was to find the absolute worst thing to review, then by God, you've achieved your goal. A score of 10 cannot be applied, as this show is an atrocity approaching infinity. Only our finest mathematicians could come close to rating this correctly. I want to die.
My.
That's my favorite feedback of the week.
Pretty good. We got a DZ who says, not very familiar with JCW or ICP other than their WWF and WCW runs. Having an in-house DJ seems like something the big leagues should think of when they are airing their video packages. Seems like it would make for a better live experience other than having to sit through the fifth highlight of something that happened earlier in the show. Okay, I don't know about that. Okay, Matt Hardy.
Easy there, Shaggy. Too dope.
Matt Hardy and John Morrison in a three-way with some Steve Corino-looking midget really does show what the difference between niche wrestlers and the pros are. Not a Colt Cabana fan, but the racist cop character was pretty... The rapist cop character, excuse me.
It was both, actually.
Yeah, that's right. But the rapist cop character was pretty entertaining, worked for the audience. And speaking of the audience, they don't look too much different than people who go to small indie shows. Just a group of people who are passionate of their juggalo lifestyle and gather to a festival to enjoy it with people just as passionate. As a wrestling fan, I can see what the attraction is. 5 Faygo drinks out of 10.
We go to Terry from Oshawa. The first match was god-awful. Just because the announcers can swear doesn't mean it has to be shoehorned in. The promo video after the first match should have been used as reasons to stay away from this mess of a festival. I understand Colt Cabana is a good guy and willing to work anywhere, but there has to be a cutoff. Poor guy, at least he had a semi-competent opponent in Vampiro. I stopped halfway through the Cabana match. Sorry guys, the show might pick up, but I don't have the patience to wait it out. I've been a fan since day one of Review Away. I'll be listening on Wednesday to hear what else happens from this show.
Well, certainly no shortage of... we actually got way more feedback on this show than typical reviews. And our final piece of feedback... Or sorry. piece of feedback... Oh, fuck it. Okay. Our final piece of feedback comes from Joe from Essex, who says, "Hi guys, long-time listener, first-time piece of feedback. Being from the UK, the only experience I had of ICP was from the PlayStation 2 game Backyard Wrestling. I had no idea what to expect watching this, and from the start I was confused to who this old guy was cutting a promo on Colt Cabana, and then I realized it was Vampiro. The first match was bad and the commentary was awful and mainly consisted of the word fuck and the phrase, you know what I mean, and two pasty white guys trying to speak like gangsters and dressed in clothes 8 times too big for them. I struggled through the second match and gave up on the pay-per-view when Vampiro won, and the commentator took out hand sanitizer after shaking Vampiro's hand. At the 40 minutes I watched of this was truly dreadful and made me grateful for the recent wrestling, decent wrestling that is also available."
All right. Well, thanks, folks. Some spirited feedback this week on Review Away to Juggalo Championship Wrestling and Bloody Mania 6. I won't lie, I enjoyed watching this show, and I enjoyed everyone's reactions as well.
I love the feedback. Yeah. I mean, I guess I understand the appeal of like why people like this show when we start complaining, because I love it when we... It's more entertaining to hear people complain and get upset.
It's great. It's a great release for some. All right, well, that brings us an end to Season 4 of Review Away. Today was the season finale. Next week will be the season premiere, I guess. It's our 5th anniversary, Way. This podcast has been going longer than most people's relationships out there. 5 years of reviewing stuff like Bloody Mania 6. So wow. What do we have on tap for next week? Well, as we have mentioned already, it's going to be open questions, as we like to do for each of the anniversary shows. And we're going to be reviewing something that is near and dear to many people's hearts. And we're going to give you a little tease of that as we go out here, of what to expect on Review Away next week. So I'm very much excited about our 5th anniversary coming up next week, Way. Should be a lot of fun as we look back at one of the most infamous events to go down in pro wrestling, and I use that in air quotes, history.
A great idea that changed the business.
All right. So, folks, without further ado, here's a hint of what's coming up next week as ICP takes us out with Take Me Home. And we will chat with you next week for the 5th anniversary. And here's what you can expect.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jim Ross, alongside Jerry the King Lawler. And King, this is a unique hybrid of boxing and wrestling. Well, WWF is always the innovator, and I'm going to let you go over the rules in a second, but this is a combination combat. You can wrestle, you can box, you can throw down your opponent. Tell them the rules, JR.
3 1-minute rounds, ladies and gentlemen, point system in effect.
The most punches per round will earn you 5 points. For each takedown you earn, you'll receive 5 points. And for each knockdown you earn, you will receive 10 points. The legendary Danny Hodge will be the official for this contest, and a knockdown ends the brawl.
No, a knockout. Knockout.
Knockout.
Look at me, I'm famous, on top of the world. I finally reached the big time. I'm a superstar. Stand up, step back and take a look. Is this really what I had in mind? I don't really wait. I guess them goals that we set in the day, they actually came to be. Yeah. But now I'm looking at a blank white paper. Damn. And with a whole book of memories. Only memories.
In the Jeep, in the camo top. Some Dre and anybody by right would sell us.
Cause we always win. Sounds belong and pollution strong. And the Fago always warm and flat.
But if nowadays supposed to be heaven for me, then just give me my old.